Welcome everyone to episode 8 of the Real MVP podcast, and I'm your host, Modern Vintage Gamer. Now, the first thing I should mention is I do apologize for the lateness of this episode. I've had a pretty busy October with some travel and other things going on. I was just at the Portland Retro Gaming Expo last weekend, and that really was the time when I should have recorded the show and headed out, but it was an awesome show to attend, and I had so much fun. I did a panel of The Secrets of Copy Protection, which was the same one as a previous episode on this show. So if you've listened to that episode, it was pretty much the same talk that I did out in Portland. And the reason why I did that was because, obviously, there was an audience there that had not actually seen or heard that presentation before, so I thought I would bring it to the West Coast and have folks over there enjoy it as well. And I've got to say, I had a really good time in Portland, and I was very, very encouraged. You know, one thing that you may not know about me is, even though I do bring an air of confidence into everything that I do in my content, and I always give 100% when I make videos and look at researching topics and, you know, deep dive into the things that I'm interested in, I'm also human as well, and there's always that uncertainty factor or element to some of the things that I do. And I remember when the panel was about to begin, it was on Saturday the 19th of October, which was, you know, the last Saturday before I film or record this episode. And the panel started at 11:30, and I remember walking into the room. They give you 15 minutes beforehand to prepare, you know, get your laptop set up, get your PowerPoint all set up and ready to go with your slide deck and everything. And they do like a sound check with the sound guy and just basically do some, you know, quick tests and everything just to make sure the sound and the audio and the video and everything is going to be good. And I remember when they started to open the doors and let people in, I was thinking to myself, no one's going to turn up to this thing. No one knows who I am in this town, and no one really gives a shit about my content. So I just kind of had a moment where I was like, I don't even know how many people are going to turn up to this thing. There's probably going to be about like 30 people. And I thought, you know what? If there's like 30 people that show up to this thing, I will be happy. But I remember when they opened up the doors, people just filed in and kept filing in and kept filing in. And I'm not exaggerating. Ask anyone that was at my panel. It was a full house, and I was so psyched about it. I didn't realize how many people really liked my content and really cared about, you know, coming to see me. And it was very, very encouraging. And I'm not trying to flex or anything like that, because, you know, you guys know I'm pretty humble and I don't really do those types of things. But I was so psyched and so encouraged, and it really just gave me an extra amount of energy, you know, when I did my presentation. I think it was really, really well received. It was recorded and it will be out on YouTube at some point. I didn't record the episode myself, but I believe the expo or some of the people at the expo did record it. There was certainly a video camera there that was filming me, and I was asked if I was fine with being recorded beforehand, and I said yes. So there will be a YouTube video of it at some point show up on YouTube. But I think for me, you know, having so many people come and watch me do my presentation really just brought that human element back to everything. And it's something that, you know, you really do miss when you create content and you kind of sit in your office, you know, pretty much all day, every day, working on content. You know, you obviously are talking to people through social media, you know, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube comments, things like that. But, you know, the actual human element, when people come up to you and say, man, I really love your videos, you're awesome, you know, you're an inspiration and all that stuff, it's very, very humbling. And I got to say, I got a little emotional before I started my talk. I just kind of sat back and took it all in, and it was very, very awesome. So, yeah, I mean, I had an awesome time at Portland Retro Gaming Expo. I also met up with a whole bunch of you new YouTubers that I'd never met before, including some of the Metal Jesus crew, and they were all really nice people. I got to hang out with Metal Jesus for a while on Friday night at one of the local bars there. Had a few drinks, talked about metal concerts, which we'd been to as in the past as we were kind of growing up. And that was really cool to meet with him, as well as John Riggs. He was a really nice guy. I always knew John Riggs would be a nice guy, but he was very, very nice to me, and he was awesome to talk to. And I also got to meet some other YouTubers, Wrestling with Gaming. He was an awesome guy to hang out with. We were at the hotel bar having a few drinks on Saturday night. That was an absolute blast to hang out with him. And really just kind of got to hang out with a whole bunch of people that I don't really get to hang out with except for conventions. And as you guys know, I've only been to, well, this is my second convention of the year, and with the first one being earlier in the summer at Long Island Retro Expo. And both conventions were fantastic, and I am planning on doing conventions next year. And hopefully Portland Retro Gaming Expo, the management there, will ask me to come back. I did have a big turnout at my panel, and it was very, very encouraging. So hopefully they'll ask me to come back, because I thought it was a fantastic show and one that I really enjoyed. But I do have some topics that I want to talk about in this episode. And the first one that really comes to mind, and one thing that I kind of was going to make a video about, but I also felt like it was more of an opinion piece or a bit of a ranty topic of discussion, so it didn't really fit into what I'm trying to do on YouTube. And that's probably one of the reasons why I have this podcast, is to really just kind of give you my opinions on things. A lot of people ask me questions in the comments about certain topics, and a lot of the time, you know, I see those comments, I read pretty much all the comments on my videos and tweets and stuff, but I don't always get a chance to respond. And sometimes, you know, it doesn't really fit the narrative or the vision of my channel that I'm trying to accomplish. But so I want to get into the PlayStation 5. So I believe it was October the 21st, like a week ago, where we saw some images of these prototype PlayStation 5s with the Let's Go Digital logo on the right and this kind of futuristic or really ancient case design, depending on which way you look at it, like something from the 80s. And it's kind of been dubbed like the Buck Rogers kit or something, or the Buck Rogers design. I've heard that before. And I've also been told that some people internal to Sony also refer to it as the Buck Rogers kit, which is hilarious. Now, of course, that's not confirmed, but I have heard the term Buck Rogers being used as the way to describe this thing. So let's kind of talk about some things. So there was some leaked images of a real PlayStation 5, or so we thought, around October the 20th, 21st. And the first thing that was very apparent to me is that this was a development kit. This was a development kit, and I know this is, you know, probably preaching to the choir, stating the obvious, but let's be clear, guys. This is not what the PlayStation 5 is going to look like when it finally releases in the holiday season of 2020. This is a very early prototype development kit. In other words, when the first development kits get assembled, they're usually done in a pretty crude fashion. Now, I'm not saying this is the earliest development kit for the PlayStation 5, because the earliest development kit essentially is just a PC with some custom hardware. In other words, you know, I mean, you can, if you think about what happened with the Xbox One and the original Durango kits, it was something that you could put together with parts, and obviously that was something that some individuals did and tried to sell on eBay and got in a lot of trouble doing that. But that is definitely another story for another podcast episode. But the point here is that a development kit is something that really is kind of slapped together very, very quickly in the beginning, and then kind of undergoes different revisions over time. Now, I can tell you for a fact that this PlayStation 5 prototype image, a lot of people don't believe it's real. I can tell you for a fact that it is real, and it is a PlayStation 5 development kit. But these images that have leaked out, there's kind of some 3D renders, which really makes people skeptical whether this is legitimate. And then another YouTuber known as The Zone of Tech kind of leaked these photographs of a actual PS5 dev kit, which looked like an actual PS5 dev kit, and kind of slapped his watermark on those photos and made a video about it, talking about, you know, how it worked and what it did and everything. Now, again, guys, this is a real PlayStation 5 dev kit. This is not fake. It's actually legitimate. But it is a very old development kit. This development kit is probably around 6 to 8 months old, and there are already about 2 to 3 revisions since that development kit that have been released. And now that we're about 12 months before the launch of the PlayStation 5, we're getting very close to the final development kits that are already out there. And we may already be at a point where the final development kits are in the hands of developers. And now what I mean by final development kits is, as mentioned, the development kits over time, especially in the beginning, undergo different designs to kind of accommodate the hardware that they're trying to utilize. And the final development kits, I would expect to look very similar to, and in some instances, identical to final hardware. Now, the thing is, no one knows what these final development kits will look like other than registered Sony developers. And obviously, they're under NDA. And if they attempt to leak photographs of what the final dev kits will look like, that would be very bad for the individual who leaked those photographs, as well as the studio that individual was working for. So what I'm trying to say here is that don't put too much stock into these PlayStation 5 leaks. It's certainly not retail. It's an old prototype, very, very early development kit that design is going to be completely forgotten about once the retail PlayStation 5 is released. It's an early development kit, and it's nothing like what we're going to expect. Now, a couple of other things I want to talk about in Zone of Tech's video was he clearly messed up on a couple of things. Now, look, I'm not here to point fingers and you know, critique people. God knows I've messed up on my videos before. I've said things that were just incorrect information. But I also do feel like there is some part of me that needs to clarify a couple of things that he clearly got wrong, and really just kind of showed his ignorance of what development kits are and what they aren't. And I think he was just kind of, you know, trying to generate hype and clicks and interest, which is totally fine. I get that. It's YouTube after all. You want to generate that hype and you want to make sure that you get as many engagement and as much views and clicks as you can. I'm definitely not knocking his hustle, but I will say a couple of things. He believed that the power button was a camera, and he mentioned that the dev kit had a camera built into it. Why? I really don't know. I think he tried to justify something about, you know, it's there for the Twitch streamers or the streamers that have access to a built-in camera. But if you really think about it, and if you look closely at the photographs and the renders, there is no way that this is a camera, and there was nothing that was ever considered in the PlayStation 5 development, building in a camera into the hardware. It just doesn't make any sense. So he really kind of got that one wrong. And the second one, which was even more hilarious to me, was the row of 8 lights, kind of labeled 0 to 7, across the left-hand side of the PS5 early prototype development kit. He mentioned that they were for the number of cores that were being in use, or the number of controllers that were being used. And it really just showed to me that he wasn't really sure what he was talking about. Those lights actually signify the GPIO indicators of different things. You know, if you've got different GPIO connections going on, those things will light up accordingly. It's not really that complicated, and it's something that you would see in an early development kit, especially when the hardware is still being kind of ironed out, because again, you know, early development kits, things tend to change pretty quickly. So yeah, I've definitely found the PlayStation 5 coverage quite amusing to this point, but I also can't help but think that Sony is kind of driving the narrative somewhat. But on the flip side of that, I'm also aware of those photographs that were leaked, and I can tell you that Sony is aware of who did those leaks, and they're not happy. And usually that would result in the studio being reprimanded. In some instances, they'll have their developer access removed. Now, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen here, because I'm not familiar with the studio and the person who leaked these photographs. But I will say that if you are a registered developer on any system, not just Sony, you know, PlayStation, Microsoft, or Nintendo on the Switch, don't leak prototype photographs, guys. It's really going to get you in trouble. A lot of things are checked and watermarked, and people know, you know, where these leaks come from. It's not one of those things where it's anonymous. In the old days, you know, you could kind of get away with doing things like that a lot more. But, you know, if you're a registered developer and you're looking for some clout, or you want to, you know, leak something out, think again before you do it. I mean, think about the repercussions that it would do to A, your career if you were caught, and B, the studio that you work for. It really isn't worth it, especially for old prototype hardware that is out of date. Now, look, you know, once the revision has passed and you want to put up photos of PS4 prototype hardware or Xbox Scorpio prototype dev kits and stuff like that, absolutely. I mean, I'm fascinated and very interested in that stuff. I mean, I do have some development hardware myself that I collect and I've used over the years, as you guys know. So yeah, I mean, just don't do the up and coming stuff. I think that's really the takeaway here. Now, before we get off the topic of PlayStation 5, one real quick thing: the price. Now, a lot of people are talking about the price. It's been locked in, and there's some retailers over in Europe that are already taking pre-orders and stuff like that. Look, guys, the reality is no one knows what this price will be at this time, other than the marketing department at Sony, and they're probably having internal meetings right now going over the price and the features and what they're going to sell the PlayStation 5 at, if they're going to just bundle it as a core system or they're going to have some downloads available for it as well. But look, my guess is, and I've always said this, is that it's going to be a $499 system. It's going to be a core system with one controller. And I can tell you that based on the hardware that we're expecting to see, and the controller with the haptic feedback stuff, which is probably going to cost, you know, $75 standalone just to buy another controller, Sony is going to take a loss on this console. I mean, the bill of materials here, especially when we consider a ray tracing machine with 8 gigabytes of RAM, and let's say it's a 1 terabyte SSD, because that's kind of what I'm thinking it's going to be, you know, they're going to take a loss on this hardware. But it will be interesting to see how well it actually sells. I think it'll be a very successful system for Sony, as the PlayStation 4 was before it. But it's definitely going to be an interesting race with Microsoft and their Project Scarlet hardware, which is also launching in the holiday season of 2020. Now, let's talk about Scarlet for a minute, because all this talk has been about PlayStation 5 dev hardware being leaked and stuff like that. We haven't seen a single thing about Project Scarlet, other than the talk that we saw back at E3 back in June of 2019 or June of this year. Now, either Microsoft is containing their leaks very, very well, or there's only a handful of developers that actually have access to Scarlet development kits. Now, I don't really know which one to be true, but what I can probably assume is that their first-party developers, such as 343, have access to Scarlet development kits. Now, once again, they may not be anything more than just a Frankenstein PC at this point, with the appropriate specs of what the Scarlet will be. Or on the flip side, they're just utilizing Project Scorpio development kits, and essentially just going to retarget for Scarlet hardware once it becomes available. I guess what I'm saying here is I haven't heard a single thing about Scarlet dev kits. And that is very interesting to me because there's always going to be some talk about the dev kits out in the wild. Now, if anyone that is a registered developer that listens to this podcast, let me know if you have access to Scarlet dev hardware. Now, of course, I'm not interested in knowing more about it. I just want to know if they are indeed out there, because I think it's very interesting to me that, you know, everything is coming from Sony right now, and not much talk about Microsoft is in the press right now. Now, that, of course, can change very, very quickly over the next, you know, few months, few weeks, whatever. But I always feel like around this time before a new console generation, like about 12 months out, we start really hearing about leaks, renders, photographs, you know, rumors, either real or false, about up-and-coming hardware. And as of right now, at least, Scarlet has been very, very quiet. We haven't really heard much at all. I would say that a very few developers have access to development Scarlet hardware, and I'm using air quotes for that because that is essentially just some kind of Frankenstein, you know, PC. Or they're just using, you know, Scorpio development kits, which will then kind of retarget to the appropriate specs of the Scarlet once the dev hardware is available or not. I mean, I think what both Sony and Microsoft have in their advantage is they will absolutely be releasing cross-gen games for the PlayStation 5 and the Project Scarlet next year. But these games will also run very well on PS4 Pro and Xbox One X, and just kind of have some retargeting and some better specs in general. You know, maybe they'll turn on ray tracing or whatever for the, you know, upgrade to the PlayStation 5 or Scarlet. But essentially, it's going to be a fairly bog standard port to the new hardware of the kind of these cross-gen games, because I think that's really what's saving Microsoft right now from I don't want to say saving because that's probably not the right word to use, but, you know, having the fallback to using Project Scorpio dev kits in order to get Project Scarlet games developed is something that they can definitely fall back on, and it will be a safe bet for them while the development hardware does become more available. But yeah, I haven't heard anything about development kits for Project Scarlet to this point. And if you are a registered developer, hit me up, shoot me an email, let me know if you are using one. Don't really want to know about specs or photos or renders or anything. Don't care about that stuff. Just more interested in whether these things are actually out in the wild. Now, before I move on to a completely different topic, there is one other topic around next gen that I think I want to mention to you guys. And this is, take this as an opinion piece at this point versus something that's going to happen. But I also want to get ahead of this before you hear it from Kotaku, because I feel like this is going to happen. Now, of course, you know, I've made predictions before, and a lot of them just, you know, have not turned out to be true, and that's fine. But this one is something that is concerning me based on what I've seen, what I've heard, and people that I've talked to that are in the industry, and that is that Halo Infinite, 343 Studios, I don't think that game will launch next year with the Project Scarlet hardware. I think that game is going to get delayed. Now, a lot of people are probably annoyed at me saying that and probably are wondering why I'm even saying this, but I do have some information to share. Well, the first thing is, let's go ahead and take a look at what's been going on at 343 from a public standpoint, and we have had over the last few months some pretty high profile, high level people depart that company. Now, the good news is Microsoft PR has pretty much put a lid on most of those things, so they've just said, yeah, no big deal, you know, we wish them all the best, you know, Halo's coming along really well, and you know, we wish them well and everything like that. But let's kind of take a step back and talk about the people that have departed 343 from a public standpoint over the last few months. In August of 2019, Tim Longo, who was the creative director for Halo 5, departed 343. Now, this one was very well handled from a PR perspective, but this one was pretty significant. Now, Microsoft came out and said, you know, the usual, you know, things change, you know, it's game development, things happen, change occurs. But what's interesting is that Mary Olson, the executive producer, stepped in charge to take over the campaign team on Halo Infinite as the lead producer. But Mary Olson has also departed 343. Now, again, one of the articles that I read about this was that they were saying that, you know, turnover is very common in the video game industry. We normally hear about these things during troubled development, but we've heard nothing to indicate that Halo is facing huge issues. Now, that is a very blanket statement. Now, look, that statement is not wrong, right? You know, turnover does occur, especially on these games that literally take years and years and years to develop. There is a lot of churn that usually occurs. But what you may or may not be aware of is that Mary Olson departed 343 in October of 2019, only a couple of weeks ago. And again, you know, the message from the community manager at 343 said, you know, there's no creative dilemma and whatnot. But we're looking at multiple leadership departures. And look, I've worked in the IT business for over 20 years, you know, starting out as like a junior developer. And these days I run and manage an IT department where I work. And let me tell you, when leadership leaves, when you have multiple leaders departing the company, and Mary Olson left only a few short months after, you know, stepping into that role, There's a problem there. Now, again, you know, a lot of people on Reddit were saying, you know, what's going on with Halo? Is the team okay? What's happening with 343? And there was just kind of a blanket, you know, response saying, you know, we're reassuring everyone that Halo Infinite is going well, and we're rallying behind the game to make sure, you know, it's going to get done and execute on the vision. That's cool. That's cool. You know, there's only so much that you can read and look into before you just say, okay, well, we just have to take their word for it that everything is fine. There was also the departure of Lawrence Metten back in September of 2018, and he was the Halo multiplayer design lead. Now, this one, again, was something that people were a little concerned about back when it occurred, but it's been largely forgotten at this point as something that, you know, is part of, again, you know, the development life cycle, especially when Halo Infinite was kind of showed off in some fashion at E3. Everyone just assumed that the game was looking good and things were on track. So what I can tell you in addition to this story is that when I was in Portland last weekend, I met up with a contact who works at Bungie. Now, this person told me that over the last few months, 6 to 12 months, a lot of Bungie employees had departed Bungie to go work at 343 on Halo. They were offering good money. And, you know, Bungie was kind of in a situation after the departure from Activision where things were a little uncertain. And, you know, we weren't really sure what was going to happen at Bungie, you know, whether they were going to get acquired by another publisher or they were just going to go independent. But, you know, he told me that people had left Bungie to go work at 343. And he also was quick to tell me that the majority of those people that left 343 returned to Bungie and got their old jobs back. And, you know, he was basically telling me that Bungie is, you know, things have really gotten a lot better at Bungie over the last few months. And I absolutely believe that, especially when you consider how good Destiny is. You know, they've really turned things around from where they were, especially when they were under the wing of Activision. But going back to 343, I mean, he was very quick to tell me that things aren't going very well at 343. I don't mean from a money perspective or anything like that, but it was more about a developer satisfaction perspective, as well as the reality sinking in that Halo Infinite is nowhere near where it needs to be. Things aren't going very well over at 343, and a lot of people inside, you know, in the industry have also confirmed the same things. Now, you know, it's not really something that, you know, that you should put too much stock into when I say these things, because I mean, at the end of the day, this is just a rumor, right? But I've also talked to other people that have also confirmed the same things. I've heard this story about 343 from multiple sources, not just the guy that I spoke to, but another person that I know has mentioned the same thing. You know, on top of these high-profile people leaving 343, all of a sudden, things don't seem that rosy at this company. And again, I'm not here, you know, fear-mongering or spreading false rumors and stuff like that. All I'm saying, guys, is that Halo Infinite next year on the Scarlet as a launch title, I'm going to say right now that I don't think Halo Infinite will come out next year as a launch title. It's definitely going to come out. So I would put my money on March of 2021, like the fall of 2021, you know, a few months after the launch of the Project Scarlet hardware. But I have a hard time really believing that they're going to get this game out over the next 12 months. It's very difficult for me to believe that. And, you know, I just wonder, you know, when we'll see an announcement coming out that Halo Infinite will not be released. Now, again, this is my you know, speculation and rumors and stuff like that. But, you know, the information that we've read on news articles about high-profile leaders leaving the company, on top of just kind of the general development teams that are, or general developers and QAs and IT folks that have left 343, you know, to get their old jobs back at Bungie, to me, that's very, very compelling that, you know, it does tell me that there may be some delays to Halo Infinite. And if you ask me, again, if I'm throwing money down on what I think is going to happen, I don't think Halo Infinite will come out next year with the Project Scarlet. I think that Halo Infinite will be a March or a fall 2021 game when it's released. Man, I know there's been a lot of next-gen talk on this episode so far, but there's just so much to report right now with new consoles coming out next year, as well as continued rumors about the Nintendo Switch Pro, whether there will be a Nintendo Switch Pro. A lot of people suggest that there will be one. A lot of people are saying there'll be one that comes out next year. You know, I was definitely one of those people that was speculating that we would see a Nintendo Switch Pro this year, along with the Nintendo Switch Lite. And obviously that turned out to be a Switch revision. For all intents and purposes, it's exactly the same as the base model Switch, only with a upgraded CPU, but no performance increases as far as, you know, CPU speeds or GPU speeds. So really, we got a revision of the Switch, and at the end of the day, it's really just to increase battery life, as well as completely fixing up or closing the loophole of the original Switch with respect to the Tegra X1 exploit that was found on the original Switch that was released back in 2007 with the homebrew stuff and the hacking stuff that's been going on with the Switch. So, will there be a Nintendo Switch Pro? Well, I'm not so sure anymore. And I'm happy to say that I'm wrong, you know, because I was convinced that there would be a Switch Pro. You know, I made videos earlier this year speculating what it could be. You know, it would be like a 25 to 30% increase in clock speeds and stuff like that. But now I seem to have a differing opinion about what I think we'll see. And the reason why I guess I thought there would be a Switch Pro is obviously because of the, you know, the strong rumors that were being talked about by the Wall Street Journal and Digital Foundry and other sources talking about two new Switch models coming out, and, you know, the Switch Pro that was kind of scheduled to be announced this year. But the more I kind of look into this, the more I feel like it's not something that Nintendo is interested in, at least for the next, I mean, I wouldn't even say next year now. I would say if there was to be an announcement for a Switch Pro, I would say it would be 2021. And even then, you know, I give it a 50-50 chance that it would be something that Nintendo will do. And let me explain why I think that to be the case. So, first of all, let's talk about next gen. So, next year, holiday season, we're going to see the PlayStation 5 and the next Xbox. We'll call it the Scarlet for now, because that's obviously the code name for the system. And the more I read about these things as far as technical specs, it seems like, you know, they'll be powerhouse machines, you know, 4K, ray tracing, lots of memory, solid state drives, all that stuff. But one thing that I'm not seeing, and this is important, guys, is that I'm not seeing Unreal Engine 5 announced. In fact, there's all these rumors that, you know, Unreal Engine 5 is in development and it's coming out. But from what I know, and from people I've spoken to, Unreal Engine 5, I mean, sure, there's probably an Unreal Engine 5 in development right now, but it's not something that is going to launch with next gen. What you're going to see with next gen next year is Unreal Engine 4 plus ray tracing. That's what you should expect to see from next gen. Unreal Engine 5 is not something that's coming out at least during the launch window of next gen. So why am I saying this? Well, I'm saying this because Unreal Engine 4 will continue to be the standard development kind of framework, as well as Unity, of course, across next generation, at least for the short term, at least for the launch window and potentially the first kind of 12 months of the next gen. Now, the reason why this is interesting is because obviously Unreal Engine 4 is available on the Nintendo Switch as well as, you know, mobile devices and other things you can use Unreal Engine 4 on, you know, Android and iOS and things like that. So it kind of tells me that games aren't moving to Unreal Engine 5 anytime soon. And the reason why this is interesting is because it means that Nintendo doesn't really need to react to this. They don't need to respond to this in any way. Now, of course, I'm talking about third-party stuff. Obviously, the first-party Nintendo stuff, I mean, that's going to continue to be developed the way it is. But the Unreal Engine 4 stuff, because it's not moving to Unreal Engine 5 anytime soon, there's really no reason for Nintendo to kind of respond to this right now. You know, they'll be in a very, very comfortable position developing Unreal Engine 4 games for the foreseeable future. And there's really no reason to upgrade the Switch revision to faster hardware in order to take advantage or in order to kind of keep up with the times of Unreal Engine 5, because it doesn't actually exist and it won't, at least not for a while. And if we go back and think about the Nintendo Wii U, when the Xbox One and PS4 base were announced, Unreal Engine 4 was right there front and center with those consoles. They were talking about the next Unreal Engine generation and, you know, more realistic graphics and things like that. And the poor old Nintendo Wii U was stuck on Unreal Engine 3. And there was all these kind of post articles about how, you know, it is possible to use Unreal Engine 4 on the Wii U, but there would be significant optimizations and stuff like that. It would be the same scenario here. I'm not saying that Unreal Engine 5 would not run on the base model Switch, but it would require some optimization and some tweaking. Now, if that was the case, I could see Nintendo making an argument for, hey, maybe we need to come out with some updated hardware that boosts the clocks and the GPU and the memory speeds a little, you know, by 15, 20, 25%, maybe 30% in order to, you know, stay relevant with ports that come to the Nintendo Switch that utilize the next generation of Unreal Engine. But as it stands, there is no Unreal Engine 5, again, not for the launch window or, you know, the first year of next gen. So Nintendo doesn't really need to come up with a Switch Pro anytime soon. I think Unreal Engine 4 is something that they continue to use for the entire life cycle of the Nintendo Switch. And as mentioned, you know, it seems to be Unreal Engine 4 plus ray tracing that is going to be the next gen. So, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, these ports will still come across to the Switch, obviously minus ray tracing, but there's really nothing else that's needed. Now, I guess a counter argument for that is we're already starting to see dips in frame rates on some of these ports, you know, that come to the Switch. But, you know, those things for me don't necessarily appear to be engine-related issues. More it's optimization and developer-related code issues, you know, when it comes to the game. I mean, we have certainly seen how fast Unreal Engine 4 games can run on a Nintendo Switch. The more that I see and read about this stuff, and the more that time goes by, I don't necessarily put too much stock into a Switch Pro. You know, there's a lot of talk about the next Tegra chips and the new LCD screens and things like that. But at the end of the day, I mean, until there's a compelling reason that Nintendo needs to upgrade to a new revision of hardware, I can't see it happening. I mean, I think the Switch is more than sufficient for them to continue them on until the rest of the generation, which, you know, what is like 3 more years, I guess, until we start talking about, you know, the Switch 2. And that's a different ballgame. I mean, once we kind of, you know, cut off this generation of Nintendo hardware and talk about the next iteration of hardware, then yeah, I mean, we can, you know, everything's on the table again. I mean, we can start talking about potentially what that would look like. But as far as a iteration or a revision of current Switch, it seems less likely, at least to me, and as time goes by, that we will see a Nintendo Switch Pro this generation. I think what we will see going forward is iterations to the existing Switch with some minor tweaks here and there, but I don't expect to see any increases in clock speeds or any, you know, major enhancements to hardware on this revision, or on this generation, I should say, on this generation of the Nintendo Switch. But having said that, I mean, I'm not going to stop working on some of these overclocking videos, especially the ones that have slowdowns like Link's Awakening, and because, you know, those types of things are interesting to me to see if we can find ways to really smooth out performance and what it takes to get there, and really kind of provide some clues and insight as to what, you know, the next generation of Switch may be, or what's needed to kind of get that, you know, magical 60 FPS locked frame rate, or even indeed 30 FPS in some instances. So, you know, those overclocking videos will certainly continue because I do find them interesting, and it's something that for me, I'm always interested in seeing, you know, where the bottlenecks lie, whether it's a CPU or a GPU or, you know, a lot of the times it's a memory clock issue where, you know, the memory clock bandwidth is locked and it cannot be adjusted. So it really just means that performance doesn't really change no matter what you try to tweak. But, you know, I know I've rambled on a lot about next generation on this episode, but it's definitely something I'm very interested in. And, you know, I'll definitely be picking up next gen consoles next year. I'll probably get both systems the day that they launch, and maybe I'll even open them up and we'll do a teardown as well. I know my buddy Spawnwave will most definitely do that on his channel, but I'm always very interested to see what we'll see inside of these next-gen systems. A lot of rumors and speculation about the SSDs in both systems. They won't be removable. They'll be actually built into the motherboard. I'm not sure if I agree with that, but nothing really surprises me. I mean, that means that it's pretty much locked in at that spec, and any type of external USB drive that you may connect, assuming they let you, and if they don't let you, then that really means that they're taking something away from the consumer. You know, if they don't let you attach a, you know, 4 terabyte USB 3 drive, then that could be a problem for people. But if they do allow you to attach a 4 terabyte USB drive, then you're basically accepting the fact that your performance, your drive performance, won't be as fast as the built-in SSD. So I find that whole part interesting as well. And I know I'm going back to the PS5 and the Scarlett again, but there are a lot of questions about next gen that I think are very, very interesting to ask. And obviously we'll find out more, you know, over the next few months. I think that Sony will announce a teaser. We'll call it a teaser of then next PS5 at the PlayStation Experience at the end of this year, and then they'll have an official, you know, keynote speaker or keynote session early next year, I'll say February, March, and really kind of showcase the hardware, the games that's going to launch with, as well as the price, of course. And as mentioned, I think it's going to be a $499 price all day. I didn't mention the price of the Scarlett, but since this show is all about next gen, why the hell not? I think Scarlett is actually going to be priced cheaper than the PlayStation 5. And I think that Microsoft had learnt a lot of lessons from the last generation with regards to the Kinect and the $100 difference in price, or the $100 increase in price over the PlayStation 4. And that really hurt them, you know, on a marketing and a sales level with the Kinect stuff. And I think this time round, Microsoft is not going to make the same mistakes as they did last time. I think if anything, you know, I'm quietly confident, Halo Infinite aside, because I do think that game is not in a good place right now, but I do think with the studio acquisitions that Microsoft have picked up, that I think that Microsoft is in a really prime position to really go great guns at the next gen and really get a solid lead, at least at the start of the next generation. I'm not saying they're going to finish with more sales, but they'll certainly sell more units than they did this generation. And, you know, Microsoft, I'm almost certain they've learned from their mistakes. The Don Mattrick era of the Xbox One really was a disaster for them. Now, obviously, it's something that is still going on, and I think they're more than eager to move on to the next generation. They've got studios that they've acquired. They've been pretty quiet, as mentioned, and I think they'll have a lot of stuff to show off during launch. And I do think that the price of the Xbox Scarlett will be cheaper than the PlayStation 5. I think the Scarlett will be priced at either $450 US or maybe $399. Now, $399 is pretty compelling if they can pull that off. But I do think it will be priced cheaper than the PlayStation 5, which I think has more kind of built into it, and I think it's going to cost more. And we'll see, you know, we'll see what the future holds. But I'm very excited about next gen. I think it's going to be awesome. This time, you know, 1 year out before the systems are launched is really when I get excited about the next gen. There's going to be so many articles and rumors and tidbits and just fake news and real news about all this stuff. It's really something that I'm very excited to see. And hopefully we'll get some really cool consoles from both parties, you know, next year. And I think they'll do very, very well. All right, one more topic before we wrap up. It's a few days before Halloween, and I want to tell you guys what I normally do over Halloween. Now, a lot of people like to play video games on Halloween, you know, kind of bust out the scary games or the creepy games that they like to play, you know, once a year during the Halloween season. And I have some of my favorites, and I want to talk to you guys about it. The first thing is, obviously, Luigi's Mansion 3 is coming out on Halloween, so I'm definitely picking that up. I've got that pre-ordered on Amazon, so I will be playing that game on Halloween, as well as some others that I want to talk about here shortly. But Luigi's Mansion 3, I'm very excited about. I didn't get to play it at E3 because the lines at E3 this year were stupid busy. Even with a media pass, you know, getting to play some of these games was very, very difficult. But, you know, I've seen a lot of the game. I saw the treehouse when they were playing the game, and I've seen some other things as well of Luigi's Mansion 3, and I can tell you it's something that looks awesome to me. I was a big fan of the original GameCube game that came out as a launch game with the Nintendo GameCube, and I'm looking forward to it. So I'm definitely going to be playing that. But there are some other games that I play on Halloween that I kind of break out once a year. And the first one being Silent Hill 2. Every single year, I will break out my PlayStation 2. And it has to be the PlayStation 2 version. I've tried. I like the original Xbox version. I think it's a solid port of the game. It comes with the DLC as well that's included with the game. But the PlayStation 2 version is the original and best version of that game. It's so good. It's got the 60 frames per second movies that really just kind of... It feels really kind of creepy and eerie, but it's the right way that those movies were meant to be played. The Xbox original version, those movies are at 30 frames per second. They're a little lesser in quality as well. And, I mean, the game, the port is solid, but... It has to be, if I'm going to play Silent Hill 2, it has to be the original PlayStation 2 version. So I will be playing PlayStation 2, Silent Hill 2 on Halloween. I'm thinking about doing a live stream, and I don't know if I want to play through the whole game, but I will set up a live stream, and we may play it on Halloween or maybe the night before or something like that, because I absolutely love that game. I've beaten it so many times, and every year I play it again, and that game is like one of my favorites of all time. One of the best games ever made, and obviously the soundtrack is sensational. And I think that it's one of those games that I'd love to see a remake of on next gen. But you know, there's all these rumors about Blue Point, you know, what game they're going to be bringing to the PlayStation 5. I don't know if this will ever happen, but I would love to see Silent Hill 2 be on that list of games that they're thinking about remaking for current gen or next gen, because that would be awesome to see. But in any case, I'll be playing Silent Hill 2 on Halloween. And the other game that I like to play is Devil's Crash, which is the awesome pinball game that came out for the TurboGrafx-16 as well as the Sega Genesis. Now, I have the Sega Genesis, or I should say the Sega Mega Drive, because that game was released in Japan on the Mega Drive. So I'll be playing the Mega Drive version of that. I love playing Devil's Crash on Halloween. There's just something about it that I really enjoy. So I'll definitely be busting that out on Halloween as well. There are other games that I like to play. Super Ghouls and Ghosts on the Super Nintendo, as well as regular Ghouls and Ghosts. And I have the arcade board of that. So I may plug that board into my arcade cabinet and play that as well. I love playing Super Ghouls and Ghosts and Ghosts and Goblins and Ghouls and Ghosts. All those games during Halloween, it's always a fun time to bust out those games, or the Makimura series, as it's known as in Japan. You know, those games are awesome to play, and I'll definitely be revisiting one or more of those games in that series as well. And the other game that I like to play is a game called Death Smiles. Now, Death Smiles is a shoot 'em up game. It's like a lolly shoot 'em up game released by Cave, and it came out for the Xbox 360, but it was originally an arcade game that is a horizontal shoot 'em up that was developed and released by Cave. I want to say it was 2002, but don't quote me on that. And that's a really a fun game to play on Halloween. If you like shoot 'em up games, this is a good one to get into for the 360. It's a cheap game to buy. It doesn't cost you very much money, and it's really a fun game to play. It's an easier shoot 'em up to get into, kind of bullet hell style shoot 'em up games. It really teaches you how to play those games. It is horizontal, not vertical, and that does tend to put some people off, but I'm a fan of Death Smiles. It's a great shoot 'em up game, and definitely one worth checking out if you are interested in that. And like I said, if you are thinking about getting into shooters, I would say, you know, check out the Xbox 360 version of that game. It's very, very cheap, and it's a fun game to play. And if you like achievements, I mean, you can knock out most of the achievements pretty quickly. Obviously, you know, some of the harder ones are going to take you more time, but it's one of those games that's so much fun to play, and it really has that dark Halloween element and theme to it as well. So yeah, that's another one that I like to play, and I'll definitely be checking that out on Halloween as well. You've been listening to episode 8 of the Real MVP podcast. I'm your host, Modern Vintage Gamer. Catch me again next month for another episode of the Real MVP. Bye for now.